You're listening to your MBA podcast with David and Kane. Kane, it's the second week of the NBA season. How many games have the Lakers won?
I think like the worst, right? They're like the worst team ever in the history of the NBA.
0.0!
Which is exactly how many shots Russell Westbrook has hit as well, right?
Ironically, his number is also zero. It's very apt. Is it zero or double zero?
No. I think, no. He's only zero.
It's only zero. I want them to change his jersey. Not just zero. Put 0.0. 0.0! Kane, we're doing our NBA season overs and unders. I want to make my first choice now.
Wait, why the fuck do you get your first choice?
I don't know.
Okay, go. You go first. You talk about your team first.
Russell Westbrook. It's over. It's over! It's over! You hear me? It's over.
Wait, this is a prediction or is this a team prediction?
I don't know. This is my therapy session. This is my therapy session!
Right. Yeah.
Russell Westbrook is ruining my life. He's ruining my life and he's giving me mental illness. He's giving me the thing that Ben Simmons has. Mental illness. Seriously, Kane, I've been watching the last couple of Lakers games. It's a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. Russell Westbrook, he's shooting like 25% from the field.
No one guarding him as well?
They played the Trailblazers. The Trailblazers are tanking this season. Does the Lakers know this?
I think the Lakers are also tanking, except they didn't realize they didn't have a pick.
Okay. Low blow. That's a low blow. They played the Trailblazers. Not only are the Trailblazers letting Nurkic, a center, guard Russell Westbrook. Nurkic is not even guarding him. Nurkic is down in the post, letting Russell Westbrook basically be wide open on the top of the key, beyond the three-point line. Essentially, no one's guarding Russell Westbrook. Talk me through this, okay? Because when I say Russell Westbrook is over, I really think after this contract, which is ending, this is the last season of his contract, I think he's making like over $40 million.
Yeah, this is his play option year.
It's over. There's going to be $0 for him. He is going to be a minimum player.
Oh, not even a min.
He'll get a minimum deal at least. I think he could get a mid-level exception, but that's it. There's him with any sort of like sizable contract. No way. I can't see it.
I wish though in his post-game interviews he would just be a bit more real. Like just own up to the shooting woes and stop saying like I played solid, like oh I played good defense.
He played good defense.
You're not getting paid $44 million to play good defense.
He played good defense for the other team.
Yeah.
That's my main problem with this garbage of a player. This terrible, I'm not gonna even rate him as a player. I'm gonna talk about him as a person. He's a terrible person. He's a terrible human being. You be quiet. Listen to me. He's a terrible human being.
He actually is a decent human being.
His kids hate him. I hate him. Los Angeles hate him. Akron hates him. Akron hates him.
Oh, no, please. He seems like a good guy, actually.
He's not a good guy. He is absolutely not a good guy. And the reason I say this is, like you said, his post-game press conference has just been a disaster. He complains that the reason he played badly is because he was benched, and then it affected his back. It hurt his back or something. Another time, he didn't start or something. And he said it was putting his hamstring in danger because it meant that he would have come into the game like cold or something. I mean, this guy just he is devoid of reality. He's some other plane. I don't know. Surely he knows he's playing like garbage and that he is garbage. Right? He must know this. Does he know this?
It must be some kind of like, I think so. I think it's some kind of self-defensive mechanism to shield his feelings. So, you know, he doesn't fall down into further depressions and lower his confidence even more. Because imagine him shooting now with his delusional confidence. Imagine like when he actually accepts he's a garbage trash player. And then how bad is he going to shoot then? I think his touch is worse. I think he's got worse shooting touch than Ben Simmons. At least Ben Simmons is like hitting floaters and stuff.
At least Ben Simmons at some point, well, that's a different story. I was going to say at least Ben Simmons knows better than to shoot. But maybe Ben Simmons should actually like try one shot. I mean, Benson doesn't like shoot any.
He does. He tries floaters and stuff.
Or look,
he's actually pretty good at floaters.
Russell Westbrook, you don't try that. Please don't try that. don't try anything. Don't put it above your head. Okay, just pass it. Just please.
It's kind of weird. Like,
help me.
He used to be a fairly good, a pretty decent shooter. Like, how does he lose that ability so? I don't know, like, so quickly. Not quickly, but how does it just fall off? He's still a professional player. He's still one of the top athletes, you know, in the world. How hard is it to shoot a basketball? People much, much, much smaller than him can shoot a basketball with ease. Like, he's got coaches and dietitians and just body technicians at his disposal, and how is he able to just get worse and worse at shooting?
And obviously, at the end of last season, because he had such a disaster season, the trainers or the coaches or the video guys or his team surely would have said, over the summer, you got to improve your shooting, right?
Yeah, of course.
And I think it's gotten worse. It's just gotten worse.
Yeah. Okay, I think the silver lining is that it is just three games in. It's pretty obvious where the deficiencies are, and if they clean up that side of things, which is obviously shooting, the worst shooting team ever in history of NBA opening seasons. If they can just fix that, I don't know where it's going to come from. I don't know who's going to make them better as a better shooter, because that backcourt of what's his name? Patrick Beverley and Russell Westbrook is sad to say the least. And Reeves too. Reeves, like, to me he's a decent player. Like, he can handle the ball. He's got like a lot of good qualities in general. But where is he? How come he's not shooting any better? Like, a little bit better, but still. Like, the bright side is they got the Nuggets next.
Oh god.
And the Nuggets
help.
They don't play Jamal Murray back to back nights. Then look at the Wolves. The Wolves are, you know, D'Lo's looking really good. D'Lo revenge game. And then they got the Nuggets again.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, God.
And then they got the Pels. They're versing the Pelicans.
So what you're saying is, let me just replay these feelings next week when we record again. And the Lakers are going to be like 0-6.
Okay, honestly, in the first 10 games total, they're 0-3 currently, okay? In the first 10 games, there are only two winnable games as Jazz games. Every other game they're versing against, like, top echelon. They should have beat the Blazers, obviously. But given that they already lost to them, every other game they're versing is against top Western Conference teams. Jazz is the only team they can beat. And the Jazz... Have the Jazz won one, right?
The Jazz have definitely won.
Jazz have only won. Jazz are 3-0.
No, boy. Well, make that 5-0.
How did the Jazz win? Is Jazz just...
Add another two. Fans of Utah, add another two.
What's happening with the Jazz? Have they become... Is Lauri Markkanen the best player, honestly? Yeah, Lauri Markkanen lost game against the Pels. He's got 31 points and 12 rebounds.
Jesus Christ. Okay, well...
I should have drafted Markkanen in my fantasy team. I was thinking about him, but I don't want to pick another Jazz player.
Okay. So what we established in the first minutes of our show is that the Lakers are going to be like 0-10. They're going to start 0-10.
It's very possible. And at that point, do you trade Russell Westbrook? Like, when do you decide to
trade him last year? Dude, trade him.
Okay, but what are they waiting for then at this point? If you're so sure they should trade him straight away.
They're waiting for some leverage so that they don't have to give away both...
Okay, so they're waiting to win some games, basically.
Right now, if you trade Westbrook, it's like your lowest point. You're not winning any games. People know that you're desperate. And they're going to say, okay, we'll take Westbrook, and then you add one of your first-round picks.
But I don't see the play of Westbrook being like the leverage point. Yeah, sure, it opens up other deals, possibly. But I think more importantly, the deal that's on the table isn't contingent on Westbrook's play. It's his contract that is, and the Lakers draft picks. That's the thing. It doesn't matter what Westbrook does, because the deal that was reportedly on the table all offseason was Buddy Hield and Miles Turner for Russell and two Laker picks, 26 and 28. It doesn't matter. If that deal's on the table and Hield and Turner can save the season, you don't want to go zero. And you don't want to wait until it's 0-10 and then make the trade, because then it's pointless. Then you've given up more draft picks.
Right.
You want to make the deal now while the season is still salvageable. 0-10 is not salvageable. They're not going to make up a 0-10 hole.
Indiana, they don't care. They're looking for Watayama, whatever that guy's name is. Whereas the Lakers are trying to make something out of this season.
I get what you're saying. Like, just make them suffer a little bit more. But I don't see what else you can take out from, like, put in or take out of the trade. Like, the Lakers aren't going to get more desperate if they're 2-14.
I think they'll be fairly desperate.
Nothing will save the season.
Nothing will save the season, but, you know, being LA, being LeBron, being, and when I say LA, I mean the media attention, right? So I think those are all...
LeBron will be there another season as well.
It would be just the laughing stock of the league. So technically, you're right. Mm. You know, they don't... It wouldn't make a difference, especially if their season is unsalvageable at that point.
This season. Yeah.
But I think the optics are so bad that, you know, to save embarrassment, they would have to do something. And I think at this point, you know, what's stopping other teams from pulling trigger? Probably nothing. They just feel like it's on their timeline. So when they want to do it, they'll do it. And, you know, until then, they're happy to wait. I can't wait any longer, Kane. Like, at this point, I think Westbrook is just trolling us. He's trolling the Laker fans.
I mean, like, Westbrook as well, but it's just such a weird makeup team. They thought they could sign, like, this free agent journeyman, Damian Jones, as the starting center, and it'll fix, like, the center woes. And Thomas Bryant is like, I don't even know if Thomas Bryant's played, but like, they have no centers. They went from JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard to nobody, basically. Nobody. And then they decide, and then instead of shooting guards, they used to have Alex Caruso. They had a chance of getting DeMar DeRozan last offseason. They've had multiple chances of signing Buddy Hield, like multiple offseasons. And what have they got now? Patrick Beverley, Russell Westbrook. They re-signed Dennis Schroeder.
Oh, God.
I think at this point, I think Magic, I want Magic back at this point, honestly. At least Magic won a championship, I guess.
Are you saying that they'll be better off just signing players alphabetically? Starting.
Alex Caruso.
That's why they got him. Now we know why they got him.
Yeah. Anthony Davis.
My rant's over. Any good news from your side? What are you seeing in the first weeks of the NBA?
I can't say I've seen too much apart from the Nets. Boy. It's an early season so far. I did watch, to be honest, the only two teams more. I have watched is the Lakers and the Nets.
Say more.
I'll be honest. And the Sixers. I watched the Sixers as well, but that's another kind of saddish story.
So what you're saying is you watched about 10 games and saw one win.
Yes, that's right. That is exactly right. No, I watched the Clippers too, so I was rooting for the Clippers.
Tell me about your Nets. How are you doing? How are the Nets doing?
Nets, they clanked the home opener, the season opener against the Pelicans. Pelicans are just way too strong, way too athletic. Healthy Zion is, he's an all-star and, you know, an NBA all-teamer. And yes, based on my prediction, they will easily make top four in the Western Conference with Zion healthy, which is not a given, obviously, because he's never shown any ability to play an entire season healthy. But even if he plays 60 games and he just has, like, you know, some niggling injuries, that should be enough. That good. Brandon Ingram looks possessed. Mm. He's no longer KD light. He looks like KD. He looks strong. He's got those mid-range jumpers just like KD does. He's fast. He's got quick release.
New appearance.
He's got a new appearance. Mature. He's got a bit of a beard, like a shaggy beard, but a bit of like a, you know, short afro. I like it. Yeah, it looks maybe more mature. It looks more mean. Mm. He's got like a, you know, that face, that mean mug. I like it. But it's not just that. Like, you know, Trey Jones is good. Jose Alvarado is like just as good still last season. It's just surprisingly just good. Like, such a good all-around team. And then Jonas Valanciunas, such underrated center. Like, that's what the Lakers need, like, toughness on the inside. That's what Miles Turner will give you, toughness on the inside. That's what Jonas Valanciunas and obviously previously Steven Adams gave the Pelicans for so long. They just had a defensive anchor in the middle and a guy that could just clog the paint in offense and grab off an easy offensive rebounds, which is no problem against an undersized Nets team. I think why the Nets beat the Raptors is because they're kind of similarly built, where Siakam, you know, 6'7", 6'8", center, obviously, you know, super wiry, really strong, you know, like just super long arms, can just like get anywhere. He's not physical, and same as our center, Nick Claxton, who you seem to rate really highly. I think he's okay, he's a decent center, but he just doesn't have enough size to verse guys like, you know, obviously like Jokic or Embiid. Or even Giannis.
Well, he's literally the only center you have.
Against a Siakam, I mean, even against Siakam, Siakam scored over 39 points against the Nets, against Ben Simmons and Nick Claxton trying to guard him. It was a good game because like both teams are quite athletic, but they're not like big. So it was quite a fun back and forth game, I found. And luckily the Nets pulled out the win because KD is, you know, special towards the end. But he hasn't really shown to be special so far this season. And same as Kyrie. Kyrie has had great moments, but he hasn't shown to be special yet.
Great moment. Which great moment is this? Which great moment of Kyrie are you just referring to?
I think I'm talking about the tweets. You're obviously talking about the tweets. Seeing some great moments, highlights, the highlights in the right. Twitter world.
How about his Alec Jones video tweet?
Did he really?
You didn't know this?
Oh,
I didn't mention this. This is a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, good
though. Yeah. Okay. He retweeted something from Alex Jones.
It's okay. It's not important. Did you see my? I showed you that video of his post game interview, and then afterwards he hugged Clara Wu-Tsai. And look how happy Clara Wu-Tsai looks. She looks.
I don't know.
She looks relieved and satisfied and content with the whole situation and. Yeah, she's got a smile on her face while she's hugging Kyrie. Like, what's not to like?
I thought you might have was overreading that situation. I mean, no doubt. I think it was. Don't laugh. I'm serious.
It's kind of a sweet moment, though. At least
so sweet of
at the very least.
Well, how's that a sweet moment? I thought it was fine. Like, I'm not saying.
Well, how often do you see owners hugging players?
Okay, that's true. So it was definitely nice, but I didn't read too much into it. I didn't think it was especially warm or, it's...
Yeah, I'm not saying it's like
third game of the season and their first game. Win.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's not like, yeah, of course, I'm not like going over the moon about it. I'm like, oh my God, they hugged. I'm not saying it's a huge deal, but it's a good step because Kyrie has been pretty... hasn't shown much love to the organization, and Clara basically is the organization, and them hugging each other and Clara like trying to initiate a hug with Kyrie, a bit of a disenfranchised player, I think you can read a little bit more into it. And I think if you string a few more wins, string some good feelings, look, you know how I feel about Kyrie. I know it could be poison to the team, but I wouldn't mind if they gave him a contract extension.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay. Jesus Christ. Look, first of all...
But at the same time, I wouldn't be upset if they let him walk after the season.
First of all, Claire, make sure you wash your hands after that, hugging Kyrie. Secondly, I want to talk about you quickly just on Kyrie. So how are you feeling about your Nets after these couple of games? I know they won against the Raptors, which is, that's a solid win. That's a great win.
A good team. They're a good team. And I think the Pelicans are a legit team. I think if I was a Sixers fan, I'd be much more concerned than, you know, saying I'm a Nets fan. Like, as a Sixers fan, like, I'm starting to get worried that Joel Embiid and James Harden can't play together. Where Sixers go on runs when Joel Embiid is on the bench. That's scary. And James Harden seems to be less efficient when they're on the court together. So far, three games in, three losses. It doesn't seem like when one plays well, the other plays well. It seems like they can't coexist fluidly, which they should have had because they had like almost, how many games did they have last season? Like at least half the season last season, right? Plus including the playoffs. And the entire offseason training camp, and James Harden was healthy for the first offseason in a while. it should be much, much more cohesive already, you know, a week into the season.
This is actually really interesting. And it's interesting on multiple levels because, one, James Harden is playing his best basketball. In 1.5 years, 2 years. But at the same time, his best basketball is basically like a replay or a reliving of like Houston 2016. And I'm not sure if Embiid is into that.
Yeah.
And this ain't Houston Rockets, right? This is Embiid's team, Embiid City.
And the ball needs to be in Harden's hands. But if Harden's doing his thing, he's looking for three-point shooters. He's actually looking for Tobias Harris. He's looking for Maxey. He's not doing this pick and, like, yes, he worked really well with, what's his name? The Hawks center?
Clint Capella.
Yeah, he worked really well with Capella, but Capella was such a hard-nosed, hard-working center that would just do his job, just do the pick and roll, and just roll to the rim every single time. With Joel, he's freelancing. He's doing the pick and roll, but then he's popping out to the top of the key. He's standing out, like, with no man's land. What's James Harden going to do? Just... you know, like lose a play and then just like just toss it back to Joel Embiid and, you know, just give up the play. Like, no, he's going to try to make the run. And if Joel Embiid's not in there in the action, then he's going to try to chuck it out to an actual 3-point shooter. Joel Embiid's pretty good. Like, he's more than decent, obviously, but he's not someone that just in the flow of offense you're just going to give it to, because he's going to freelance, is going to isolate, he's just going to do his own thing. And yeah, most often than not, that's a pretty good shot. But against teams like the Bucks, where he struggled against, he really struggled against the Celtics, couldn't get it going against the Celtics. He had a great game against the Spurs, but then, you know, James Harden, not so much. I'm not seeing that cohesiveness between these two, that either one's having a good game and the other one's having an average game, or vice versa.
So normally I would say this early in the season, not really a problem, because ultimately if you know that Embiid is the franchise, then that dynamic will work itself out. But in the case of the Sixers, we know that Daryl Morey, who runs that organization, he loves him, James Harden, so much that I'm not sure. Maybe he's thinking this is like alpha one, alpha two, in which case we have a problem. Mm. We have a big problem.
Well, he's not that dumb. He's not going to give up Joel, who's the future of the... He is the franchise. They gave up Ben Simmons.
The guy that doesn't want to play basketball?
Well, in the prime, it literally wasn't. Like, it became painfully clear, like, you know, in a couple of seasons later, like, who was the guy. But for a while Joel was injured, there was literally a debate like who should have the keys to the franchise.
But that was before Daryl's time.
Sure.
I'm not saying that Daryl is thinking that somehow Joel is expendable. No way. He knows better. But I think he would probably... James Harden in his eyes is probably a lot higher than James Harden in reality, or in the eyes of like fans like us, right? Or even Sixers fans, which I think is problematic. When Ben Simmons was there, it was quite clear from the fans' perspective who the city belonged to, who had the key to the city, is Joel. Mm. And I think if Gerald tries to somehow over-support James Harden, I think that could be problematic for Joel, who... Mm. There's no doubt in his mind, I know, that he sees this as his team exclusively. James Harden, that's nice, that's cute, but he's there to support me.
If you look at Doc Rivers' resume and the reason he continually gets hired for big-time gigs, top head coaching jobs for championship-caliber teams, the reason he keeps getting these jobs is because he's built a legacy of handling egos. This has been his MO. He is like Tyronn Lue to the max, except he's not really Tyronn Lue anymore, because this is a great problem to have. You have two alphas, two guys that, you know, really good. At least James Harden this season is really, really good. And Joel Embiid has finished second in MVP voting in the last two seasons, which is an amazing person to have in your team. And if he can't figure this out, then he's going to get fired after 10 games, basically. If they're even 500 at 10, maybe not 500, if they're under 500 by the 10 game mark, I think he's gone. Because there's no way that you're going to be six games deep to the Celtics or, you know, whoever is the first seed. And you're going to make that, it doesn't matter. I know there's so many games still to go, but 5 games in, it's so hard against the teams that rarely lose 2 games in a row.
Because it's not about just maintaining that pace. That means you would have to win 10 games.
Yeah, then you have to start going on 10 games win streaks and stuff like that.
We don't even have to speculate at this point because the next couple of games is going to be crucial for the Sixers. They're going to have to start winning 1, 2, 3 games, right? And they're going to have to win now, yeah. Right? Because they've already lost 3 straight.
Any team that's winless is you're being asked questions why they're winless. I mean, they're versus. I can tell you why they're versus Celtics. They're versus the Bucks, and then they had a back to back against close to back to back against the Spurs, and they've been smashed every game except the Bucks game, which was really close into the fourth quarter. But then Giannis took over. Not even took over. The Sixers were doing so well. They had a great comeback, but bad execution towards the end.
So on a back-to-back, they lost to the Spurs, who are projected to be the worst team in the NBA this year at 22 wins. Good job.
Well, they got Pop. They got an actual coach, so.
Okay. Should we get to our picks for the season?
Let's do it.
Unlike other shows, we're not going to beat around the bush. We're going to give you our picks this season now. The teams that we feel the most confident about in terms of both overachieving and underperforming.
Before we proceed, I just wanted to revisit last year's projections. I got to say, we're pretty good. The only reason I won is because you had one dismal pick where you said the Wolves would win less than 33 games. And you were wrong by 12.5, but you hit major. You said Cavs would win more than 26 games, and they beat that mark by 17 games, which was the biggest out of all of us. And then I did pretty good with the Grizzlies pick. I picked the Grizzlies would win more than 41 games, which is pretty ballsy. And the Grizzlies obviously went from 41, which is about 7th, 8th seed, to the 2nd overall seed, and I got 14 extra games from that. Some other big ones. You got the Raptors. You said the Raptors win more than 36 games. You hit big on that, 11 games. And then, everything else is just all gravy. But your big loss was picking the Wolves. Actually, that was the only wrong pick out of all our picks, which is pretty amazing.
It's D'Lo. He got me again. He got me. It's D'Lo every time.
I mean, it's pretty big. Getting wrong by 12 games. The Wolves obviously exceeded. And not only have they exceeded last season, but they've now traded. I mean, Beverly, a pretty important part of the team, but we can start with your pick. You picked the Nets. Okay, you picked the Nets. I thought you said you picked the Wolves under. All right, what's your first pick?
Let's start with an overachiever. My first pick is the Orlando Magic to go over, and the reason for that is not so much that I think Orlando Magic's going to be a world beater, but they're projected to win 27.5 games this season, and I say no way. They've got too many young talents. They've got a really great pick this season, or during the draft. I don't know the guy's name, but he's turning out to
Paolo Banchero.
Banchero. He's turning out to be legit.
He's on my fantasy team.
Solid pick. And I feel 27 games, I think they can easily go. They can easily get into the mid-30s, if not more.
Oof, mid-30s, that's tough. They don't have any discernible talent apart from Banchero because the other picks, Jalen Suggs and, Mo Bamba and obviously Jonathan Isaac, have all been top 5 picks and they've all been bust. Every one of them. They did pick Franz Wagner last season and he was 7th overall and he's probably their best player. And then Banchero is solid and Cole Anthony is what pick he was, but he's also a pretty solid point guard. But look at all the high draft picks, Markelle Fultz, Jalen Suggs, Mo Bamba, Jonathan Isaac. I'm sure they have other top 5 picks that just have been bust. in Orlando?
Well, I actually do rate Markel Fultz. I mean, he's no number one pick, but...
I mean, he doesn't get on the court.
Well, we don't know. Maybe this season he does well. Like, I feel like last season he was playing well and then he got injured. My main thing why picking Orlando is like, I look at the teams that are rated in the mid-30s, even 40, like the Blazers, the Washington Wizards, the Hornets. What do the Sacramento Kings have that the Orlando Magics don't? You know, why are the Wizards projected to have 35.5 wins? I feel like that's Orlando. That could be Orlando. If anything, Wizards, they should be in the 20s. Well, who does the Wizards have?
Well, Beal.
Beal?
Yeah.
He's going to get COVID. He's not even going to be playing.
My only problem strategically with picking any of these teams at the bottom is that once they start to lose a bunch of games, I feel like they're just going to commit to losing all of the games at a chance for the number one overall pick. And any team, if they get Wembanyama, apparently is just going to be miles better, at least not now, but in the near future. Like, could you imagine the Thunder end up with Wembanyama? They got Wembanyama and Chet Holmgren and Josh Giddey. Fucking Giants over there.
That should be illegal.
In Oklahoma.
It should be illegal.
It should be illegal. Yeah, totally. These are like 7 foot shooting centers. So that's my only problem with picking a team that is slated to finish low. Like, they're not making the playoffs, obviously, right? We agree on that. Yeah. The Magic are not making the playoffs. It's a stacked Eastern Conference. But with 33 game, if you're saying, because they're 27 and a half, if you're saying they're going to win 33 to 36 games, that's like sniffing like the play-in tournament. You're saying that basically the play-in tournament like worthy on the edge of the play-in tournament.
I think they're going to miss the play-in tournaments, but 27 games, no way. I just don't see it. I just feel like they can switch places with Washington. I like your strategy there, that picking the bottom rated teams is a risky proposition just because of the draft coming up. You were clearly playing chess and I don't know. I was just picking from the bottom of the list.
Okay, my first pick that I want to talk about, and we don't have to talk about them too long, is the Lakers. I'm going to say they're going to win less than 44 games. And that's
a pretty fucking 44 games?
I won't talk too much about that.
How many seasons do they get to win 44 games?
Yeah, they get 3 seasons to win that. Three games.
Help. Okay, well, we don't have to talk anything.
I still pick the under.
Okay, I don't know why they are rated at 44 games. That's ludicrous. They have 1-0 games right now. Okay.
You go.
Okay, my next pick. This is a bit of a surprise.
We're picking 4 teams each, by the way. 2 overs and 2 unders.
I'm going to give you my first over. This is going to be a surprise.
You already gave me your first over. You said Magic are going to win more.
I don't know what's happening. I don't, look, I've got...
Okay,
I'm lightheaded. I'm lightheaded from yelling.
Yeah. It was just second over, but...
The New York Knickerbockers. Don't choke. Listen to me. Listen to me.
Yeah, okay, I'm listening. Why the Knickerbockers?
I think Jalen Brunson is better than people... Well, the thing is, I think people are extra down the Knicks right now because they didn't land the biggest free agent, which is Donovan Mitchell, who everyone thought it was going to go to New York, right? Literally, New York had to hire his family members, and they thought we thought, oh, it's a given.
Yeah.
They can't even land a player when they literally hired like the guy's family. This is pathetic. And his agent. I think Jalen Brunson is legit. I saw him in the playoffs last season. All I saw was Luka, during when Luka was injured, Brunson was helping them win those
Jalen
games.
Jalen was big.
Jalen was big. And I think under Tibbs, I think he'll do well. And first of all, with a Tibbs team is never going to have a super low ceiling or a super low bottom, right? He's going to play them all 40 minutes. And October, if needed, to win games.
Exactly,
38 games projected. I think they can get into the 40s, no problem. Again,
okay.
I don't understand why you know, they're grouped around the Washington Wizards. They're projected two games below the Trailblazers. The Trailblazers, I thought, were trying to tank. So the Knicks aren't trying to tank, for sure. Why are you laughing at?
Are you sure?
I don't know. But I don't know. They beat the Lakers. They did beat the Lakers.
Okay. No, that's I agree with your reasoning for sure. Like, Jalen Brunson is obviously a terrific player, but is he good enough to be this? I mean, is he even considered a star player? Is RJ or Julius still the star player, technically?
But the key here, remember,
Julius did get the big extension.
He did get an extension.
I'm sorry, I mean, RJ got the big extension.
But the key here is that they're projected to be 38 and a half games win.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is Brunson is going to get them. It's better than that. He's better than that on this team.
Yeah. I think they kind of also this season. So this is by Caesars Sportsbook made these over and unders. They've compressed. They've packed the wins like quite together.
Yeah.
Like no one's like like last season, Brooklyn Lakers had like way more than went like you know, multiple digits above any other team. And then look at, you know, where they finish. But this season, there's so many teams in the 52, 51, 48 range. Bunch of teams back together. So, yeah, like, look, the Knicks could easily get into the 40s. And then another team would have to slide down, obviously. And that's where you're going to see that ripple effect. But the Knicks have to show, like, they have to improve in some manner, basically. RJ Barrett has to be better at finishing around the rim. He's got to be a much more efficient shooter. Julius Randle has to become just more of a team player. He can't just be isolating and thinking he's fucking Joel Embiid, basically. This team has to be a better team. And Tibbs, like you said, he overworks his players, but he gets results. So it'd be interesting to see. Like,
give me your next one.
So I gave you the Lakers. My second under, I'm going to give you two unders in a row. You're not going to like this.
Oh, God.
But
give it to me.
Your man.
Oh God.
DeMar. He should have been a Laker.
Oh,
instead he's on a Bulls team that is sinking.
Just stab me in the heart right now.
They started sinking at about New Year's this year. New Year's January this year. When Alex Caruso went down. And Zach LaVine went down. And ever since then, they haven't been right.
How about this? They beat the Heat.
Well, I'm pretty down on the Heat anyway.
Okay.
Like, I think the Heat are just going to win just because they have a great system and a great coach. But I'm also not that high on it. I was close to picking the Heat under, but I have too much respect for Eric Spoelstra just to pick them. But I don't have much respect for the Bulls. And I don't have much respect for the star player, whether that's Zach LaVine or DeMar DeRozan. And I definitely think Vucevic is over the hill now. And Lonzo Ball might just have had career, almost close to career-ending injuries to his legs, where he's not going to be the same player, where he's a player that literally relied on athleticism to be able to guard players and to basically sky for alley-oops. He was a pretty special player. I kind of miss him now as a point guard that could pass the ball and fly around and defend. He was great at dunking as well, which is exciting. But what we didn't realize when the Bulls traded for him from the Pelicans is that he was actually the glue of this team defensively. And they tried to replace him with Alex Caruso. And I think Alex Caruso patched some cracks, but like, I know no one's saying this, but Alex Caruso is nowhere near the player of Lonzo Ball. Like, there's not much Alex Caruso can do to replicate what Lonzo Ball did for this team. And without Lonzo Ball's defensive presence, I think this team falls apart. Vucevic, like I said, is getting older. DeMar DeRozan is still good, but he can't be the star player. He literally cannot be the star player. And that's why I think 42 games, yeah, that's a bit low. I think they've, like, this projections have already said, like, they're not going to go and win as many games, but I think they're going to be even worse than that. I think something terrible is going to happen, unfortunately, and this team is going to crater. And that's where a team like the Knicks could kind of get into that 42, 43 game range and take over the Bulls, because I think the Bulls, yeah, will not reach 40 games.
I do like your pick here. I think this is a strategic pick. So we know that Lonzo is out indefinitely. Who knows when he comes back, if at all, this season. Like, he's been out for like over a year, I feel. And whatever he has is not getting better. It seems that it's getting worse. It's turning to like Brandon Roy.
Yeah.
But more importantly also, Zach LaVine is battling injury.
He had knee surgery.
He had two knee surgeries, I feel like, in the last year.
You're right. I just can't recall when he had that first knee surgery. I think it was in Chicago, though, when he had that first one. They was out for a while.
Right. And 2 weeks ago, he said he was feeling good after a summer where he didn't really play any sort of like basketball. And then just this week, he was out because of like soreness in his back or somewhere. And that's like a bad sign. That's a sign of like your body's like probably breaking down, right? In other words, you're feeling good, but as soon as you basically play basketball, you're injured. You know, like, it's not about resting for a game or two or even a week or whatever. You've been resting for like 4 months, 5 months, and then as soon as you play basketball again, your body says, nope, can't do this anymore.
But he has played, right? I see in his box. He didn't
play. No, he didn't play the last game, I think. He
played against the Cavs. They got smashed by the Cavs, but he played the Cavs game.
So normally, I'd say even without those two players, you got DeMar, who is legit, and you can definitely squeeze out 40 games. But I feel like this is a nice strategic pick for you, because if the Bulls see that LaVine is not right and Lonzo is not right, then basically their only out in with their situation is to tank. And they'll probably make a concerted effort to tank. Otherwise, they have really no future, right? I think they're like over the tax maybe. And also they traded a lot to get Vucevic. They overpaid. You know, they paid a lot to get DeMar.
I mean, no regrets though.
No regrets.
You got to go for broke.
No, for sure. And we lauded those moves, right? We're saying big moves, and it was working out last season.
Of course.
Before the injuries, before December, they were like the number one team.
It's not their fault. Injuries derailed. They had a fantastic season last year.
So definitely no fault of theirs. But this could be, if they don't do well, and if they feel like these injuries are here to stay, if LaVine, who's not really been staying healthy, even just like immediately after being paid like $200 million or whatever his contract is, they could see that this season might be a special way out, in which case, you know, they'll tank and get a high draft pick to reset that roster. They're projected to get 40.5 wins, and I say under. No way. Yeah. Not 40 wins.
Easy.
And my rationale is, you know, I could be wrong because Dame has been playing really well, but I'm not sure about his injuries. I feel like he's getting older. He's getting up there as well. And the only thing that they've done this offseason is to trade away, well, last season was to trade away CJ McCollum. So they've literally surrounded Dame with less, and what's like, why would they be better?
No, I totally agree. But just looking at this list, I'm looking at the team's worst. Like, they have projected less wins than the Blazers. And I got to say, giving them 40 wins is a huge props, like huge respect
to Dame. Yeah.
Saying Dame is that special. Dame is going to, like, Dame's win share is like 10 games, basically. He's just going to win you 10 games. Mm. Just like against the Lakers last game.
Oh, okay.
He just wins you those games. And then makes me win the bet. Dame time, baby. Okay, cool. So the Blazers, yes, I totally agree. That's a great pick.
Okay, give me yours. What's your next?
Okay, I'm going to make this one quick because we've talked about them before by the Pelicans. Even though they got them at 45 games, which is quite high, I'm going to say they're going to win over.
Wow.
Because I think they're going to go top three. And I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. And they're going to win more than 45 games, probably in the 50 regions.
Okay, well, I like this pick as well. I didn't pick the Pelicans because I don't believe in the Pelicans, but I like your pick because I can definitely see them outperforming this season. I'm too scared to actually put my money where my mouth is at, But
yeah.
I respect this pick, actually. This is a nice pick.
Okay.
My last one.
That's it. I guess that's all the picks then. That
no, we gotta talk about this.
You don't have to.
Okay, I want you to know, first of all, before I reveal this pick, that I respect you. I think you're a good person, but we gotta talk about your Brooklyn Nets. Your Brooklyn Nets projected 50.5 wins.
Solid, baby.
Look into your heart and tell me you agree with me. It's going to be a big under. It's a big under. It could be 10 games under. That's how bad it could get.
I think...
Actually, forget 10 games. Maybe 15 games. Jesus.
But
10 games would be like 500 team.
Calm down.
Look in your heart.
Look, 50 is pretty high. I would pick under, but I would probably say that... Like, to be honest, if I was a sporting group, I would probably project the Nets to be about 45.
Mm.
And then I'll probably, like, people will probably find it much harder to bet. But this is the reason they do these things. It's not so much like, oh, they project them to win or something. It's like they're doing this to make you bet on, like, to take your money, basically. Because you're going to take the under on the Nets. That's what most people are going to do. They're going to take the under on the Nets. That's what sheep do. They just think the Nets are going to go. They're going to go under.
Okay, you calm down, Kyrie.
And that's what all sheep do.
You calm down, Kyrie. First of all, Kyrie's not going to play 50 games. When, how many more games before his birthday? That's the end of the Kyrie season. I'm not sure if KD's going to last till December. Okay, that's number two. And Steve Nash. Tell me how Steve Nash is looking this season so far.
Yeah, average.
The answer is no change.
It's no better. I texted you. I saw some late game substitution. I was very happy.
Look, don't let this Raptors win cloud your judgment. Let's just be honest.
Also against some.
They almost lost. Okay, the Raptors like came back from like being down double digits, and save for a couple of misses from Siakam and the Raptors, I mean. And some bad turnovers. I mean, they were sending this thing into overtime.
Yeah, that's basketball. That's how basketball works.
You calm down.
You miss some shots. You make some shots. Yeah, you know, that's how basketball works.
I'm still learning. Look, I'm still learning.
And the Nets are going to score more than the other team more often than not, and that's why they're going to win more than 50 games. Not that I'm taking the. Not that I'm going to.
50 games is generous, but what I'm saying is.
Yeah, 50 is generous.
This is a strategic pick because there's a 25% chance that this team could just fucking blow up by January. Like I said, don't let this Raptors win cloud your judgment. It was a close game. If they lost that game, they would have been 0-3. They start 0-3, they could be in the same place as the Sixers and the Lakers.
Okay. All right. Good pick. I got to be honest. Objectively, that was a good pick by a bad person. Okay, my last pick.
Wow. Okay, you got that in there.
My last. I'm going DEFCON on this last pick.
DEFCON 3. No. Do it. DEFCON.
No. I'm going to be positive because I think the Cavs are going to win more than 47 games, and I think it's pretty obvious why. I'm pretty high on.
I like this
on the front court: Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, and I mean, I know we don't rate. What's his name? Donovan Mitchell. Well, you rate him less than I do. I think he's fine. Like, I think he's a pretty good player. I think he's overrated for sure, but I think he's a pretty good player. But man, like, once Darius Garland's healthy again, pairing him with Donovan Mitchell, it doesn't matter that Darius Garland is injured, because like when he's like, because Donovan Mitchell is just like going to pick up the slack, because the defense is just so good with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, that twin tower, the perfect twin tower. Usually twin towers don't always work, but this is like the best combination of twin towers, because Jared Allen has no ego. He just plays defense. He just grabs rebounds and he just sets picks. That's all he does. And he just rolls. And that's all he does. And that's perfect. And this is why this team is going to win more than 47 games.
I like this pick. This is a good last pick. And I see this pick from this perspective. The Knicks are talking, wanted Donovan Mitchell as if he was the franchise player. And if you feel like many players, and especially the Knicks, feeling that Donovan Mitchell is a franchise player, if you add a franchise player to the Cavs, already a solid young team with real talent,
Yeah, Mobley could be literally a franchise player.
This is over 50-win team for sure. I think low-risk pick, very nice pick.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think with Donovan Mitchell, I think where he gets overrated is like especially with all the Knicks talk, was that people were pitching him to be like the savior of the Knicks.
Mm.
And that's why Jalen, like, that's why I just feel like I have no faith in Jalen Brunson going there and RJ Barrett getting the big contract, because it's like you're putting so much pressure on these guys to save the Knicks. When has any player in the last 20 years saved the Knicks, honestly?
No one.
Well, maybe Derrick Rose or Melo or Lin.
Lin, yeah. Lin, for
sure. Those are low bars, because those are all low bars, to be honest. But you literally count the number of players in the last 20 years that have made a positive impact on this team.
Most of my memorable Knicks memories from the last 20 years involves James Dolan kicking out famous people.
Famous people.
Spike Lee.
Famous black people, more specifically.
Charles Oakley. The fan that said, sell the team.
I wonder if Jay-Z ever goes to Barclays and like, do you have your team, your visitor pass with you? Your VIP pass? Do you think Beyonce gets in a VIP lift and then they're like, oh, can I see your VIP pass?
He literally kicked away the biggest Knicks fan. The number one Knicks fan. Okay. All right, Kate. We're at the end of another show, folks.
That's funny. I'm literally the face of the Knicks, basically.
God bless James Dolan.
He still goes on television dressed in like orange and blue.
I know, it's kind of beneath him actually at this point. It's embarrassing. Please, Spike. Like, my other great memory of the Knicks in the last 20 years was them thinking that they were the shit and getting their asses kicked by Atlanta in the playoffs.
Yeah, they won the first game. And they fucking like ripped the city. They fucking like went on the rampage in the city after winning one playoff game.
Okay.
Going up 1-0 in the playoffs and then end up losing four games in a row. And also spitting on Trae Young as well.
I know. It's ridiculous.
Some fans spitting on Trae Young.
Like, fucking pretend that you like you've been there, Knicks fans.
Yeah, this is why New York can't have nice things. This is why, like,
no kidding,
including the Nets as well. I'm like, just in general, New York sports fans can't have nice things. Look at the Yankees as well. What have they won?
I feel like recently the Nets fans at least are self-deprecating or whatever Nets fans you can't find. I mean, if you can find them,
okay,
in the New York area. I like, you might have to check overseas. Backhand.
Solid backhand compliment.
Check overseas for the Nets fans.
Solid.
Say, definitely a lot of Steph Curry fans in Brooklyn, I'd say.
Yeah. That's fair.
Okay, but the Knicks fans are so arrogant. Anyway. Okay, until next time, listeners, please. Donate to... actually, I don't know. Goodbye.
Donate to...
the Russell Westbrook
Lakers scouting.
Thank you for listening to Your NBA Podcast with David and Kane. If you enjoyed our show, please tweet us at Your NBA Podcast.